Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, I received a package. It's a little weird because it came not to you or to me or even to Max Fun, but to the bar that is owned by Stuart Wellington, one of the co-hosts of the Flophouse podcast.
Oh, Ben, you know when you start getting mail at a bar, that's when you know you have a problem, right?
Yeah, well, I really appreciate the person that sent this in. I will say, for future reference for anybody listening, please don't send things to to Stuart's bar. It's not my mailing address.
It is what you have on your business card, though, Ben.
Here's what I'll say. If you email us and you don't seem weird, we'll probably just give you an address to mail something to. If you don't want to email us, send it to Maximum Fun. We'll pick it up the next time we're in LA. But in the package, there's a bunch of Star Trek magazines. There's like a full color glossy magazine of Star Trek: The Next Generation. And I guess there's two issues of that. One is the writer's issue, and one is a Q-centric issue.
Am I seeing bags and boards over there? Like, are those bagged up and boarded and like,
yeah,
preserved?
I've probably diminished the value significantly below what a natural Jaeger goes for these days.
Wow.
And then there's also two... I don't know. I guess they're comic books. Oh, yeah, they sure are. They're comic books about the individual characters, I guess. Oh, man. There's a Geordi one that has a diptych of LeVar Burton as Geordi and also as Kunta Kinte.
Oh, no.
As the first page. So this is some wild shit. Yeah, I'm not going to read it on air, but...
yeah, more of a visual medium.
This came from Joseph Koch. Oh, this is Koch Comics, I think, on Twitter.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I don't know if it's
Koch,
a couple of times.
Koch or Koch. I've heard that pronounced two different ways. But yeah, these are really cool. And thank you so much.
Wow, that's very nice. I will have to put the address of my local bar out there on the internet so I can start getting mail there. That sounds great. Did they slide you a frosty beverage and your mail all in one motion?
It came down the bar in slow motion.
Like that scene in Back to the Future. Milk. Chocolate.
Stuart Wellington is one of the nicest guys in the world. His bar is a real delight, and it's just a great neighborhood bar. And anybody within striking distance, I highly encourage you to go check it out.
Nice plug.
The guy received mail for me. I felt really bad.
I meant that totally sincerely. He is great, and if I only lived in Brooklyn or its environs, I would be going there on the regular. So I'm glad you're going there enough to get your mail. You know, the next step of bar patronage is getting that brass plaque on your seat. So hope you're more than halfway there at this point.
I would love the brass plaque, but I would never have the guts to actually like invoke authority over a seat, you know?
Yeah.
I would never ask somebody to get up because that's technically my seat. Anyways, Adam, speaking of Brooklyn, I want to propose something to you live on air right now. Let's do an East Coast tour this year in addition to Greatest Gen Con 2017. The people are demanding it, and I think we could do big stuff.
Well, Ben, there's three more days left in the year when this episode drops.
I mean,
that's even less lead time than we had on our West Coast tour.
How do you keep track of when these come out? Because we have like 8 episodes recorded that aren't released at this point.
I keep a calendar open during our podcast session.
And, is that why you're always a little bit distracted?
Yeah, I'm just looking at what I need to do next. So that's all. Yeah, of course. I'm prepared to agree to those terms. Absolutely. I'm totally into an East Coast tour. But, I mean, we had talked about doing a Midwest tour also. Are you kicking that can down the road?
No, I think we'll want to take this off mic. But I think we should have serious conversations about like what cities we can hit, like what the best way to do it is.
Whether or not to do 4 in 4 days. Someone said something really funny on the internet about that live show tour that we did, which was, before I saw you guys live, I thought Adam was Burns and Ben was Gracie. But after seeing them live, I know that the exact opposite is true. I wasn't sure how to take that at all. Like, I get the reference, but
I think that we've maybe set the table for that a little bit, because usually like I'll self-deprecate and praise you and vice versa, and then I think like people like get in on that joke, and then our feelings get hurt because we're like, hey, you're not allowed to deprecate us.
Leave the deprecation to us.
But probably our fault.
Speaking of things worth making fun of, the episode today is season 4, episode 24, The Mind's Eye. Geordi LaForge, Ben. He's hopped into a flat pack bunk bed shuttle. He's going on a long trip. I feel like this is a message that gets sent to Geordi from the crew. Like, the entrepreneur is doing Uber runs all the time. Yeah. We know they have shuttles capable of warp drive, but they're going to stick Geordi in the impulse engine only shuttle and send him out into space for like 3 weeks, the time it takes to transit his trip. It's sort of cruel, and he doesn't seem to get the joke.
Yeah, they need a break from him, and with a data-like level of credulity, Geordi accepts this as a thing that he's gonna go do. So he's gonna go to RISA for an AI conference, and he's like getting into the groove of things in the shuttlecraft when a Romulan warbird decloaks dead ahead of him.
Whoa! Computer! Sequence 010, maximum power to the shields, kill the music.
He has like a moment of panic, and you know, that's our inciting incident for the episode.
We get a good long ease into the hot tub in this episode too. Like, we get to see what Geordi does when he's alone, utterly alone, and it's a little terrifying. Like, He's a real computer talker. He's clearly the one who uses Siri. The only person who uses Siri, I think.
I don't know. Like, I feel like if we can use our cell phones as an analog to having a computer you can talk to, like a device that has lots of interesting ways that you can interact with it, from checking Twitter to playing a game to reading a book, whatever. Like, you can do a lot of things. He kind of acts like he's kind of new to this.
Yeah.
Like he's like, computer, like, do you have any games I could play?
Like, the first time you ever used a computer and you found Minesweeper and you were like, oh my god, this is the greatest.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like he's new to it, and so he's like just kind of getting up to speed on this whole having a computer situation when the Romulans get him, and that's the push to opening credits. When we come back, it's all like Klingon politics. Like, it's almost like the show forgot this really exciting thing happened, which I think is fun writing, you know? It's like you have that moment of tension where you're going to watch the credits and then the, like, first spate of commercials for the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come back, they're like, nope, tension is still going. Like, we're not even going to explain what's going on there to you. Initially, we're going to have some farty old Klingon diplomat talking to Picard about some thing they're going to do.
Did you think they did a good job of building the tension toward the end of that Geordi shuttle scene? Because they filled his view screen with that Romulan ship, and the power imbalance seems pretty apparent, but man, I was almost screaming at the TV, like, go to the exterior, because I wanted to see the size difference. Like, I wanted to see the tiny shuttle and the giant ship, and we never got that. And we know there's comps of both. It seems it would have been easy to do.
So I was thinking that it might have been, like, the size difference is so vast that the shuttle would have, it might have been like a standard definition television thing where they can't show something that small
it would have
next
been
to something that big. Yeah. I mean, like, there's ways to do it, but I also just, like, wish they would have cut back to the shot through the windshield one more time.
Yeah.
Because the way they do it is they cut to a single of Geordi, like, frantically working on his computer, and then he, like, gets beamed out. And I think it would have been more interesting to see him get beamed out looking back at the ship that's doing it to him, and more scary.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. He does a great job with that guy in the control tower as the as the F-14 does the flyby. Like he's totally startled to the point of spilling his coffee or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, he sells it great.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, the deal with the entrepreneur is as follows. They're going to go answer a claim of Federation meddling in an outlying colony of the Klingon Empire. There's like a colony that has like a separatist group that's trying to declare independence from the Klingons, and the loyalist governor of the colony has accused the Federation of supplying weapons to the rebels, which is not how the Federation gets down, so they take this accusation really seriously, and they're going with the Klingon ambassador to look into this shit and see what they can see. And the Klingon ambassador is like, he loves Picard. He's like, hey, like, I've heard you've spoken to the High Council a couple of times. That's pretty cool.
He also has some of the best Klingon loaf I think we've ever seen.
Yeah, this is some epic. I feel like they're starting to establish a premise that the older a Klingon gets, the more, like, involved their loaf gets.
Once I noticed this, I couldn't take my eyes off of it. He's got Wu-Tang Headloaf. Like, he has a very pronounced W, like, right in between his eyes. Which sort of sets him up as a character that maybe I can't trust. He might be up to no good.
Yeah. You gotta watch that guy for liquid swords.
Yeah, he's just surrounded by a swarm of bees.
One time I saw the GZA live in concert in New Haven, Connecticut. And he was, I can't even remember what song it was, but he forgot the lyrics like midway through one of the songs and got like really embarrassed, like up on stage. And he was like, "Listen, I'm a touring musician. I don't do that song all that often. And I got to be honest, I didn't practice it enough before we got up here on stage. But I don't want you to think I'm some kind of punk. I don't want you to think that I can't rap. So just to prove that to you, let me just come off the top of my head and rap for 10 minutes. And he had the DJ drop a beat and just like freestyled over it for 10 minutes without stopping. And it was great. And he totally had the crowd like worried about the situation and then won them back.
That's nice. That's a nice reversal.
It was pretty cool.
Have you seen that Marvel show on Netflix, Luke Cage?
No.
Method Man has a cameo in that. M-E-T-H-O-D, man. And it's like one of the best cameos because I think he has so much charisma. Like, he is just like so fun in everything that he's in.
He really, yeah. I mean, it's sort of like, I think he kind of takes a page out of Ice Cube's playbook,
right,
which is like, let's have this be really fun, whether or not it's like, it rises to the level of good.
Yeah.
Like, let's have it be real, real fun.
You can forgive something for not being good if it's fun instead, I think most of the time.
Totally. That's a great anecdote about our show, for example.
Yeah. Sort of fell backwards into that one.
Yeah.
I fell backwards into our brand, Ben.
The Klingons are pretty exercised over this idea, and Picard has to break it to the ambassador that part of this trip is going to involve him working directly with Worf.
Ambassador, I will ask our chief security officer, Lieutenant Worf, to make a report.
Captain, Worf's discommendation makes that very awkward.
Once again, Picard has to get Worf's back around some Klingon who finds it offensive to have to be in a room with him.
If I could work with one of the other security officers.
Lieutenant Worf is my chief of security and my tactical officer. This matter clearly falls within his jurisdiction.
I really love that about Picard. Like, he always backs Worf up, like 100%, you know?
It's interesting. I mean, this is a few times that he's done this, and it's always from the perspective of the other guy.
Yeah.
Or I should say it's frequently from the perspective of the other guy and rarely from the perspective of how uncomfortable it would make Worf. You get the one time where Worf is like, "Look, Captain, this is going to be a bad idea." And Picard
yeah,
just
sucks.
Fucking shuts that up real fast. And
yeah.
then every other time we get it from the other. And it makes me wonder, like, I would like to check back in a little bit with Worf on if he's still super bummed about that. Because I don't think you get much of that perspective anymore after the first time he did it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one time we've gotten anything about that is when J'Dan was making fun of him.
Yeah, and he got a back fist to the dome.
Yeah, and J'Dan isn't even a member of the Wu.
He's on the record label, though.
Sure.
Very unpopular.
Yeah, Not many of the people coming out of Shaolin rose to the level that Wu-Tang did.
Failing J'Dan can't sell 10,000 albums. Sad.
Make it so. So now we're going to go back to the Romulan ship, and this is like the horror scene where they are kind of like Clockwork Orange-ing Geordi, and
yeah.
They like wheel over, they have their own clip show device on the Romulan ship, and they wheel it over and plug Geordi into it, and they're like, they've taken off his visor, and they've got some like plungers that connect to the little blinky contacts on his temples, and they're pumping horrifying images directly into his brain, and there is a shadowy figure in the corner, Adam, that the camera keeps cutting to, despite the fact that you can't see her face.
Yeah, there's a creepy bread box in the corner. You know, we're made to think that the Romulans have equivalent military technology, but I found myself pretty impressed that they have equivalent clip show technology also. What they're capable of is mutually assured clip show.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want that.
I mean, maybe that's why we haven't had a clip show since the clip show.
Right.
Is like, oh, you want to show a clip show? Then we'll show a clip show.
You have that one clip show crisis in the first couple of seasons, and that sets the tone for everything that comes after.
Yeah. It's not clip show war. It's clip show holocaust.
You get bread box. God, this is a tough line reading. You get bread box Khrushchev in the corner giving orders to her minions.
Oh, we got there, Adam. It was worth it. It was worth getting there.
You know what? The only reason I bring up Khrushchev is because I want to hear you do your great and very popular Russian accent.
That's my Chekhov accent, Adam.
You've done Khrushchev before.
Have I?
Yeah, you bounce past it off of my terrible JFK impression.
I don't know what to say, Adam. I feel like I'm being pimped here.
This is really pod on pod right now. We got to get out of this.
Well, anyways, they've sent like a proxy Geordi to Ryza to attend the AI conference, and
this is the worst Geordi. Like,
yeah.
So
the world's shittiest Geordi.
Their plan, real quick, is like, so they're showing this terrible footage in order to desensitize him to the horrors of what they might make him do later. So they're playing basically Event Horizon Captain's Log footage on a loop.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, well, someone's going to miss this guy on Ryza, even though that's the most laughable part. Like, no one's going to miss Geordi on Ryza. They're actually probably pretty relieved he's not going to be there, creeping by the pool. And their idea, so that no one notices he's gone, is to send proxy Geordi. And he couldn't even be a stunt double for Geordi. He's a basketball player, tall and lean.
It's an extremely racist moment. It is so racist. Like, and also, like, this show has shown people, like, going through, you know, prosthetic makeup to look like something they're not plenty of times. Why can't they just have, like, a replicant Geordi, a guy that looks exactly like Geordi? Why can't they do a camera trick where there's two Geordis on screen at once?
Yeah, they could have done that. They had the technology.
They have the technology, and instead they did the most racist possible thing, which is, oh, this black guy looks enough like this other black guy.
It's like Kenan Thompson playing Charles Barkley. Like,
now, the NBA is way less violent than it was 20 years ago. Man, when I was on the court, I got hit all the time.
He's the black cast member, so he's the fit.
Like, yeah.
Even though, like, to be quite honest, Kenan Thompson's Charles Barkley is maybe the funniest thing that he does on SNL, and I love it.
So, yeah, they're turning Geordi into a Manchurian engineer, and they run a little test where they have a holographic 10 forward done up, and they're going to have Geordi put a hit on Chief O'Brien and see if he'll respond to their suggestion, and This episode made me realize that Chief O'Brien is, like, more potted of a plant than either of the female main cast members at this point.
Yeah.
Like he's so one note that I don't even know if he has lines in this. It's just like, hey, we need somebody that we kind of know a bit, so we'll feel a little bit bad if Geordi walks up and phasers him. But, like, you know, not somebody that we, like, care about.
I feel like the show began to get a little self-aware about how they use Beverly and Deanna, and we're like, look, people are going to start to notice how bad we are with these characters. Let's put O'Brien in where ordinarily we would have used them, and yeah. then we can get them off our case.
Right. Well, anyways, back on the ship, Worf and the Klingon ambassador are doing great work together, coming up with a, like, a framework for how they're going to deal with this colony situation. And Data is receiving Geordi back in the shuttle bay. Geordi's in high spirits, got some real pep in his step because he's had a great time on his vacation that he remembers, despite the fact that he was in the brainwashing department on the Romulan ship the entire time.
I feel like Riker basically sells timeshare to Risa to the rest of the crew, and he couldn't be more disinterested in the fact that Geordi was just there or had intended to go there from the start, you know?
Yeah.
Where's Riker in all this?
Yeah. I mean, I think Data receives Geordi, but then it winds up being Troy that, like, walks around the ship with him. And this is a weird scene, Adam. Did you get the sense that Troy was a little bit hitting on Geordi?
No, I didn't. I mean,
she's like excited to hear about whether he got that dick wet. Like, in a way where, like, when he goes into his quarters, she stands there kind of just outside them, and I was like, oh, she wanted to go in there.
I just got the sense that, you know, there's always one person in the group of friends who is not the one who makes out at a party, is not the one who, like, gets down, the chaste friend.
Yeah. And yeah, everyone, the non-hookupping friend.
Yeah, and everyone in the group tends to either tease them lightly or, when a hookup has happened, like, really probe them for the details. Yeah. And I felt like that's what this was. Like, Troy's almost making fun of him for his inability to do stuff like this. And so when she senses that he may have gotten down over there, like, I didn't think she was cruelly doing it, but I thought she was sort of making fun of the situation by peppering him with all these questions.
All right. Well, you might be right.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurses the disease.
Anyways, the captain and Riker and the ambassador beam down to the Klingon colony planet Krios, I think it is. And
sure,
they meet Governor Vach, and Governor Vach is just a like random generic Klingon, like totally indistinguishable from other Klingons. At least the ambassador has like a weird robe. Like, the governor is just in like Klingon war kit, and he gives them a rifle that they pulled off of some dead rebels, and it's a Federation phaser rifle. And they're like, well, fuck, like, this is like kind of a smoking gun, so to speak. I mean, like, if you guys have a Federation phaser rifle that you pulled off a rebel, it's hard to deny that the Federation supplied it. So we're going to have to, like, go back and test this thing and make sure it is what it appears to be.
Yeah, it basically is stamped with United Federation of Planets logos on the side.
Yeah.
It was taken out of a crate with the logo on it.
Yeah. I think, like, Data and Geordi get tasked with testing this thing. And, like I think this is around when Geordi goes into 10 Forward and dumps a glass of cranberry juice on Chief O'Brien. And it's this, like, test moment where the Romulans are testing whether they, in fact, have Geordi under control.
Yeah, a few times in the episode you get to see Geordi's POV, and there's some weird Romulan iconography when it cuts to that shot, yeah. And there's like there's some crosshairs coming down and separating.
Ooh, I'm sorry.
And that's how the viewer is supposed to see that he's receiving those orders.
Yeah, his coded orders.
Just before he spills his drink, he gets one of those. So that sort of sets up the rest of the episode and how he's receiving these and why he's acting the way he is.
Yeah, and I guess Data is starting to notice that there are these like weird blips in like the radio spectrum that like they can't explain otherwise. And every time you see one of those POVs, like Data will be talking to Riker or something and be like, hey, like there's this weird thing that keeps happening and I'm wondering if it's some kind of surreptitious communication. And I really liked this kind of C storyline in the episode of mm-hmm. Data and Riker running this little side investigation that winds up cracking the whole thing open.
Yeah.
It was cool to see Riker like supervising something that isn't really worth like escalating to captain, but also like, you know, they're curious enough about that the second officer is going to be working on it, like, when he's got free time.
And also, like, it's a project that doesn't have a sexual goal. It's just for the sake of solving a mystery. And also, yeah. Data's solving a mystery, and he doesn't have a fucking pipe in his mouth. Like, like he can actually play it pretty straight.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot to like about it, yeah.
Ben, is this the first time we've seen Geordi's POV since season one? It feels like it's been a long time we've seen through the visor.
Right. There was that episode where they're like, this is how he sees.
Interesting that at the time it felt like we would get a whole lot more of that going forward, and they just sort of dropped it. I think maybe because they could tell that it wasn't that cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a posterized false color effect.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine it being better than normal eyesight, which they've also implied several times.
Right.
Yeah, it sort of looks like, you know, when the Predator is cycling through its different ways of seeing things in the classic film Predator.
Oh, I'm familiar. I'm glad you called it a film and not a movie, because it deserves that designation. It is most certainly a film.
I need to get out of this simile. The only way I can do it is by getting to the choppa.
I've been accused of not laughing at your jokes enough, Ben.
It's because they're terrible?
Yeah, maybe that's really the answer. It's not that I'm not a giving comic
artist.
Who
accused you of that?
Oh, a lot of people accuse me of that.
Well, I can see you chuckling sometimes. You just do it inaudibly.
Yeah, I'm an inaudible laugher.
Mm-hmm.
Laugher for money. Do what you want me to do. No one's gonna get that. Cut that out.
We're just grinding to a halt here.
You're just grinding metal, Ben. Ease down.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
So it's kind of an interesting plot, right? Geordi is going to research this rifle that is secretly a Romulan rifle while he is under the sway of the Romulans.
Yeah, and the tension of this is fucking brutal, because they're in engineering and they've set up these two stations, one with the rifle and one that's going to catch the beam of the rifle. And yeah. Data's just walking around on the pointy end of the spear, basically, waiting to get shot by this.
Energy flows within normal parameters, from the pre-fire chamber to the emission aperture.
Rapid nadir pulse, right on target.
Anybody that has ever worked in, like, the ballistics lab of a police precinct will tell you that you're not supposed to be downrange when you test fire the gun.
This is the most intense scene of the whole episode, I thought. I was totally blown away by this.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. And, yeah, they also just do it, like, I mean, fortunately, it's not also pointed at the warp core. Like, they have the sense to point it away from the warp core, but it's just in the middle of engineering. Like, anybody could walk in.
This is a good time to ask the ultimate question, Ben. Like, is the Romulans' mission flawed? Should their mission not be to have Geordi wheel around and shoot the warp core and destroy the Enterprise? Like, would that not accomplish their goal even more than trying to start a war inside the Klingon Empire?
I thought about that, but then the Romulans are, like, mainly devious, and I think that, my first reaction was not even, like, shoot the warp core, but it was, like, this is a terrible plan. They're going to have Geordi prove that these are Romulan rifles while he is their Manchurian candidate. Like, why the fuck would they do that? And then I realized it's so that they can discredit Geordi to the Klingons, like, so that when he starts beaming the arms shipments down to Krios, they already, like, don't trust him that much.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So, anyways.
It's always a chess match with the Romulans.
That's a good point, Adam. So, they catch that these rifles got beamed down to the surface, and they're like, well, shit. How do we backtrack on this? And they find out that, like, it went out from a cargo bay and like, you know, there's like four people on the ship that know enough about, like, how to hide your transporter traces to do it, and Geordi is the only one that doesn't have, like, an alibi of where he was when the shipment was made,
even though we know there are cameras everywhere on this ship. Like, no one thinks to look at the transporter room footage of, like, where the shit was beamed out of.
Where Geordi was at the time. You know, like, he's like, oh, I was in my quarters. And it's like, can you imagine a situation where a ship, where you can ask it where anybody is on the ship at any time, doesn't keep a record of that also?
You could dust the isolinear chips for fingerprints, and they don't do that. They're like, oh, yeah, these were clearly mangled and switched around. We'll never know who did it.
Make it so. Geordi goes into the ambassador's quarters while he's pigging out on some Klingon food, and the ambassador gives Geordi his final orders.
Come in, Mr. O'Ford. I will transport to the surface, and when I return, I'll have Governor Bogg with me. Your captain and I will bring him to the cargo bay. I want you to kill him there in front of many witnesses. Use a hand phaser.
The rest of the episode is kind of like a race against time where Geordi is on a wide-ass lens walking up a hallway on his way to do a murder, and Data is, like, all over the ship doing research on these, like, blips, and he, like, finds sketchy isolinear chips in the shuttle pod, and he, like, decides that the blips are probably brain waves.
I feel like you could play this, like, from this part of the episode to the end, and the end of the first Naked Gun movie where Reggie Jackson has been programmed to kill the Queen. Like, the pacing and the tension are, like, almost perfectly aligned.
There's some things about the pacing that are a little silly, but I think that one of the things that makes this episode work for me is the music is great.
Yeah.
It's like a movie level score. It's like, it seems to be on a much higher level than we generally get. And Data manages to warn Worf over the radio that Geordi needs to get taken into custody.
Data to Lieutenant Worf. Priority one.
Go ahead.
Take Commander LaForge into custody immediately.
And so Worf is, like, trying to run across the cargo bay to get in between Geordi and the assembled crowd. Because, like, the governor and the ambassador and Picard are all there. And when Worf starts moving quickly, like, the Klingon lackeys, like, jump on him. And he's like, no, I'm trying to stop this. And so it winds up having to be Picard, like turning around and grabbing Geordi's arm right at the right moment and getting the phaser out of the way. Once again, a phaser goes into the ceiling, and we don't get the cutaway to the guy cutting into, like, a pot roast, you know, one floor up, when and, like, a beam of light comes up through the plate on his table.
It singes his hair.
Yeah.
I thought
his wife calls from the other room. It's not burnt, is it?
It's O'Brien and Keiko sitting down to one of Keiko's awful meals. O'Brien's like, oh, thank God, I don't have to eat it. It's like, instead of O'Brien having to scrape his plate into a napkin, he's like, all done, I ate it all.
She turns around and sees the crater, the smoking crater that was his plate, and goes, wow, you really like that. I'll have to make that more often. And he goes, wah, wah, oh, boy.
Worf is on this ladder when he sees Geordi approach the gang. And I thought it was an interesting choice that he yelled LaForge instead of Geordi. Did this register with you at all? Like,
it did.
We rarely hear anyone yell someone else's name using their last name on this show.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to get his attention, I thought that was a strange choice, and it made me wonder if they recorded it several times, if they shot it several times, and then that was the best take.
It's interesting. I mean, I sort of wonder, like, because Worf doesn't really know much at that point, right? Like, for all Worf knows, Geordi could be, like, freely deciding to kill the governor, and that would be just as plausible an explanation of what's going on as anything.
Yeah.
Like, Data's just said, like, take Geordi into custody. And so, like, maybe in Worf's mind at that point, like, Geordi has flipped sides and he, like, is not going to be familiar with him because of that.
I thought it might be just more of a professional yell from Worf at that point. Like, Geordi sounds a little sing-songy. Like, if he's not going to call him by his full first name, like, Jordan, he's going to call him LaForge. LaForge sounds much more powerful and official if you're acting in a security context. What is Geordi's full name? Geordi's clearly short for something.
Mm-hmm.
Jordash? You don't want Worf yelling Jordash across the shuttle bay. They have got to pay for that product placement.
Yeah.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
This episode has one of the great creepy buttons. Mm. And it's Geordi and Troy in a room in like a therapy session. And he is like insisting that he remembers this trip to Risa. And like these are real things that happened to him. And she does a little like verbal Aikido and gets him into the slipstream of recalling the Romulan attack on his shuttlecraft, and it blows him away. And then she makes this promise that we know will not be fulfilled at the end of the episode, which is that they're gonna like put him back together piece by piece, and it's gonna take a long time, and he's going to be a wounded character after this.
I mean, it's a promise to Geordi the character, and it's a promise to the viewer that I am wondering if they will ever call back.
I don't think they can. Like, I think that they're so pot committed on it just kind of starting fresh every episode.
Yeah.
Especially for Geordi. That, like, I mean, you know, he's not a damaged character in the next episode.
Yeah, and that sucks.
I mean, I don't even know what the next episode is yet, and I know that he won't be a damaged character.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I asked the question knowing the answer, but it just... it's too bad when it's that explicit, and it doesn't get paid off. But, yeah. Yeah, really dark button. The darkest button. There is no music box that Troy can produce to put Geordi back together.
Yeah.
Hmm. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. I think that as a whodunit, it is less well executed than some of the other episodes we've seen, but there's a lot to like about it, and I think brainwashing stories are fun, and it's always fun to like have a character that that is supposed to be one of the good guys, perhaps acting like a bad guy. And I thought that, like, this may have been unintentional, but some of the kind of creepiness stuff that we've talked about with Geordi kind of played well in this particular episode. Because, like, we've kind of talked about, like, what a creepo he is. And when he's doing creepy things in this episode because his brainwashing has happened, it's, like, extra effective.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's already sown those creepy seeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now those creepy chickens are coming home to roost.
That's how you grow creepy chickens.
How about yourself? Did you like it?
Yeah, I did. This was the most Law and Order-y Star Trek episode I think we've gotten. Like, it's got the political intrigue part. Mm-hmm. It's got the police doing detective work in the B story. It's got real stakes. I thought it was good. It has an ambiguous ending, which I think is especially unique for this particular show. So, yeah, I liked it a lot. Solid ep.
You know what else is solid is my desire to make money from Priority One messages, Adam. Should we see if we have any for this episode?
All right. God, it's like you're not doing this for the love anymore, Ben. You've changed, man. You've changed.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental. Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first P1 is 16 years ago, I met a girl and thought, she looks great now, but imagine how hot she'll be when she's middle-aged. Happy 40th, sweetie.
Did we just announce someone's divorce? Oh, no, don't do it.
I ran this one by my wife, and she had a similar reaction to you. I choose to believe that they have a cool relationship where they enjoy giving each other a good ribbon.
God, I hope so.
Yeah. I mean, they've been together a long time.
If you hear this the morning it comes out and you get some cold feet about it, hit us up at the Drunk Shimoda email address. We'll see what we can do about pulling this.
Yeah, or Twitter if you want, like, fast response.
I'm looking out for you, man.
We have a second one, Adam, and it is from the BBB crew.
Hey!
That sounds familiar. And it's to Brian Hickman. It says, you thought you escaped retaliatory real doll shaming when your special day came and went, but you were sorely mistaken. BBB wishes an embarrassing revenge happy birthday to Brian. We're sure Kevin's omniscience can reveal forbidden birthday wishes even we don't know about. And remember, what happens in Borrego stays in Borrego.
You humans have the superstition that if you say your wish out loud, it won't come true. I'm here to tell you, Brian Hickman, I know your wishes, and they are very filthy. They make me want to destroy all wishes everywhere.
You might find that hypocritical coming from a man in my line of work. A man who makes rubber fuck holes for people of all stripes. I make rubber fuck dolls at price points that cater to the very wealthy, all the way down to working men and women who just want an automaton to use and abuse.
They come home from a factory job just wanting to stick their junk into a rubber hole. And I've made that rubber hole for them.
But Brian, the things that you desire, the things that you want to do when you come home, the things that you think about before you blow candles out the way I blew so many hoosnack out, they disgust me. They shake me to my core. I'm a man of special conscience. I think you would be well advised to become one as well.
Brian Hickman, your lack of conscience offends me.
viewers who enjoy these kinds of messages can go to MaximumFriend.org/Jumbotron and buy all Jumbotrons everywhere. It is $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message or a message that will end the lives of all who snack. And it helps this idiotic podcast stay in business.
Boy, Ben, you really went off-roading in that impression, didn't you? You went way off script. That was great. You did things to that impression I didn't know were possible.
Yeah. Ooh.
Good job.
Get intense.
Well, I hope you got what you wanted, BBB crew.
That's what you get when you double dip.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that. Being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform, or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ben.
Adam.
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I did, Adam. I have been developing a theory that Jordy is a high-functioning alcoholic, and I got perhaps the best proof of that that I could ever want on this in this episode. In the opening scene, he's hanging out in the shuttle by himself, And he's on his way to Risa. He asks the shuttle when he's going to get there, and it says at 0932 hours. And he says, fuck, that's 3 hours from now. So it is 6:30 in the morning, his time. And he is fucking drinking. He has a cocktail going. He has a tiki drink, essentially.
He has the pink punch of masturbation.
If that does not a drunk Shimoda make, I don't know what does, Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the literal Shimoda right there.
How about yourself?
For me, it was Fugazi Geordi. And you only get him, God, you get him for maybe 2 seconds, right? Like they do sort of a swish pan across him as he leaves the scene. But good Lord, you gotta do better, guys.
Yeah.
Like his visor fits so ill-fittingly. It's like crooked. It's like you wear glasses, so like if you were to lose one nose piece, like how ill-fitting your glasses would rest on your nose, that's how bad he looks.
It's like the SNL Star Trek parody.
Yeah.
When Captain Picard is like the captain of the love boat.
Yeah, and Farley plays Riker. Do you remember that casting?
Yeah, that was good stuff.
And Farley chooses to, like, the one part of the impression that he seizes on is how Riker walks. It's fucking great.
Yeah, and they have Tim Meadows as Geordi, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Geordi, 2 banana daiquiris. Out of sight.
Yeah, he's got Tim Meadows' visor on.
Yeah, he's Tim Meadows visoring in this episode.
There are so many times in this show where I feel like LeVar Burton feels like he's being made fun of.
Yeah.
And that's got to be one of those scenes.
I mean, one thing that we talked about in our Generations episode that we did for our live tour was like the idea of LeVar Burton keeping a list of grievances as they go through the process of making that film.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine that he doesn't have like a, you know, like in the closet on his trailer, like a construction paper chart on the, you know, in the inside of his closet that he's just keeping track of all the like exquisitely racist things that are happening to his character over the course of making the show.
If he weren't such a nice, gracious, good person, I would totally imagine he'd be doing that. Like,
yeah.
If they're going to be making fun of everyone, they're sort of fortunate that they're making fun of him.
Yeah.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 4, episode 25, In Theory. In Theory.
In Theory.
In Theory. Data experiments with love by pursuing a romantic relationship with a fellow crew member. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
Why would Data do this? Why would Data subject another crew member to his very powerful pelvic thrusts?
I was just thinking, like, it's been like almost 4 years since he got laid last, as far as we know. That's a drought, man.
You know what's crazy is that more women fall for Data than they do for Geordi.
Yeah,
and it's not even close.
Time. Yeah.
God, that's got to make Geordi feel like shit. Can you imagine? Yeah. I do remember this episode. I'm excited to watch it again.
I am excited too. I would never veto this episode. I think it's a very interesting premise at the very least.
You know, the thing about Data on this show is that people want to be Data. People want to be with Data all the time.
Yeah.
Poor Geordi. And he's got to be Geordi's friend too. It's like when you're
best buds.
It's like when you're not super popular in school, but you happen to be like luckily friends with someone who is extremely popular. That's his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a lifestyle.
Geordi's got the Letterman's jacket with the band letter on it. And Data's got the Letterman's jacket that's just covered in like football and wrestling and all the other letters.
Yeah, there's more letters than jacket at this point.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for that. You know what constantly letters our jacket, Ben?
What's that, Adam?
The support our viewers give us by going to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah.
Their support keeps our lights on. They keep the show going. They keep the wind beneath our wings.
Yeah, it's makes a big difference to be able to justify the amount of time we spend on this by keeping ourselves in podcast fluid at the very least. So thanks to everybody that contributes, and thanks to everybody that has gone to maxfunstore.com, copped a t-shirt or two. Hugely appreciated. Thanks to Dark Materia for our theme music, and Adam Ragusea for our other music. And that just about does it. Does it not, Adam?
It does the job.
Well, with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a powerfully thrusting episode of The Greatest Generation.
You can tell when Data's in heat because of the like the broken pelvises lining up outside of Six Bay.
Oh yeah, I tucked when I should have rolled.
Oh man, so many people having to wear like the cast around the pelvis just looks like cast pants.
Yeah. Do you think that that Data's erection is powerful enough to just destroy the front of his uniform every time it happens?
I think there can be little doubt.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.